And good morning to everyone. Our first case today is In Re Interest of AM. It is actually two cases combined for oral argument. Ms. Solomon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor.
You may approach.
Thank you. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. Good morning, Chief Justice Hevekin, members of the Supreme Court, opposing counsel. My name is Desiree Solomon. I'm the Deputy County Attorney for Washington County, and I will be arguing on behalf of the appellant. In Re Interest of AM calls before this Supreme Court the question of what does it mean to be indigent and when an attorney seeks to be reimbursed for their court-appointed services, what is required for that attorney to show. A little history that I outlined in my brief is that the county court had an unsigned, unsworn affidavit that was filled out by an individual, attesting as to what their assets, what their income would be.
Does the statute permitting appointment of counsel in juvenile cases require the filing of an affidavit the way the statute does in felony appointments?
I do not believe so, Your Honor. In the fact of what it means to be indigent, what we looked at are other court proceedings. And what I looked at is not only the statutes of when people are entitled to court-appointed counsel, it differs from those, Your Honor, that are for our felony statutes or our misdemeanors. So what I did is I looked at our case law, and I looked at In Re Alice. Now, that is a guardianship case under our probate law. And in that particular case, the Supreme Court held that even a stipulation of the parties that an award did not have assets was not sufficient evidence that that person was unable to afford to pay for their own attorney. And so I believe that is analogous precedent by this court because we can't even stipulate to it. And I'm not saying that there... It's an evidentiary hearing. And because we're dealing with public funds, White v. White points us to the issue of there has to be special considerations taken.
The county isn't challenging the initial appointment of counsel for the parent in this case. Is that correct?
We did not challenge it initially.
And
we
are not challenging it now?
We objected at the time of the attorney fee application because at the time that the attorney applied for services, that there was the burden on the attorney to show that the person was indigent or there had been some showing.
Can I stop you for a minute?
Yes, Your Honor.
I want to be sure I understand. You're saying that once the court appoints counsel for a parent in a juvenile matter who is unable to afford counsel, that when the counsel seeks to be compensated, and each time they seek to be compensated, they must demonstrate again the indigency of the parent. Is that your position?
In this particular case, because there had been an unsworn and there had been no testimony by this individual, the state and the county felt that they had to object to the appointment.
But you didn't object, the county didn't object to the first, what, 6, 7, 8, 9 payments of this lawyer. What impact, if any, does that have?
Your Honor, I anticipated that very question with all due respect, and I looked to other case law before the Supreme Court and before I had been removed up to the Supreme Court and was preparing for the Court of Appeals in that brief. The state does not need to object. I looked at a case of State v. Rice. Now, that was a different issue before the court, and that was a court-appointed counsel that was seeking $7,000 for the purposes of being allowed to do an appeal of a criminal conviction. So I understand we're under the criminal and the post-conviction statutes, Your Honor, and that's where some of this is. We have to use analogies. But in that particular case, the Supreme Court held that even though the state never objected, and that's the argument that that attorney made in that case, is the state never objected to me being appointed. They never said this was a problem. They said the state doesn't have to object. It is an independent duty of the trial court to make a determination about the reasonableness of attorney fees. And so that's Where I look to that and that precedent of it always falls on the trial court to make those determinations under that precedent that we've had.
Is reasonableness of attorney fees different from an indigency determination?
I think it's two-pronged, Your Honor, in this particular case and with these facts. The one issue before the court is, what does the court-appointed counsel have to show if there's an objection to indigency when they do their fees? The second, Your Honor, is the reasonableness and necessary expenses, or if they're reasonable and necessary fees, because those are guided by case law. And so that is the second prong of my argument is, what was reasonable and necessary in this particular case? As the transcript alludes, that there was an issue in this county court about how things were being conducted. And so we ran into a situation where bills had been approved, they had continually been approved, and then all of a sudden the county becomes aware, we have a massive problem here. And it happens in some of the cases.
What was it that triggered this sudden awareness of the county? The county had received fee applications all along, hadn't it? And it had been a live participant in the very proceedings underlying the fee applications. So this comes as no epiphany, is it?
It became an epiphany in the volume of what was received by the county attorney's office, and in particular, this particular bill in the first appeal, A19378, I'm going to refer to that. When the $12,000 bill was submitted, that was the beginning of the end of this particular case. So then all bills and other court appointments, not just the attorney in this, started to be reviewed in the county, and a mass problem was discovered. Hence why there are now public defenders in Washington County, and that's how the board has moved forward with this. What we found in this particular case for the $12,000, once the county had went through and reviewed these bills, was the issue regarding nearly every day and had to revisit the issue of reasonableness of fees. Again, we looked at precedent that said it always falls on the trial court to make the determination of whether these fees are reasonable and necessary.
And what does the trial court look at to make that determination?
So the trial court obviously was a former attorney, and so when we review these cases, we look at, yes, they're an attorney and they should know, but the appellate court has the ability to also review those bills and those findings for reasonableness and necessariness to determine whether a patent injustice has happened. And that's what we're arguing happened in this case, is a patent injustice. After reviewing all these bills, the court didn't do an inquiry and really look at these bills to determine, wait a minute, why in this particular case was it necessary for counsel to drive to Blair, Nebraska to give people filings on a case in the day and age when we have electronic filing? That is one of the best services that we have as attorneys, is electronic filing. It's not a sealed case, but that is continuously billed in this particular matter. When I looked at the Nebraska Court of Appeals case of In Re Antoine C., which I know is not binding precedent upon this court, but when I looked at that particular case, what they looked at in the appellate court was, what did these people do before? What did this guardian ad litem do? Was it necessary that she wrote this huge report, which basically regurgitated everything that was in case plans? No. And so that's where this court can look at the patent injustice that happened here in reviewing these bills and find out, was it reasonable and necessary for this attorney to work on this case nearly every day for a period of 3 years?
Does your brief argue that certain tasks and expenditures were reasonable and unnecessary, or does it just argue $12,000 is too much as a whole?
There were certain things that were argued in the brief that contained these things were unreasonable. For example, in one of the briefs that I submitted, it talks about she spent 2 hours doing all these requests for admissions or discovery. And later she spent 3.5 hours withdrawing those discovery requests. So that is one example that I used, Your Honor, to show the unreasonableness of what was taking place in this particular matter.
Is there evidence in the record that she may have been underpaid?
She elicited an expert that stated that that she may have been underpaid. However, in that particular situation, her own expert stated that there are months in a 3A case where all you do is read a case plan. So her own expert has really made the state's point, with all due respect, of as court-appointed counsel on behalf of a mother, you're not working on these cases every month and certainly not for every 3 years because there's months you read case plans.
Would that relate to prior billing, not the one that was before us today?
Well, the court under Lippincott v. Lippincott can look at prior billing to determine whether this fee is reasonable and necessary, and that's exactly what the court did in that divorce case. There was an award of attorney fees of a certain amount. This court found that they had already been compensated a certain amount, and so they did reduce the fee that that person had to pay the other. Granted, that was a divorce case, and you're talking about two private individuals. But I'm going to bring you back to the fundamental issue in this case.
Before you go there, I just want to clear up a point. Is it accurate to say that no objections were made to any of the prior billing before the $12,000-ish dollar bill came through?
That is fair, Your Honor. Okay.
And isn't it also the case that each and every one of those, unlike in the divorce context, would have been final and appealable at the time?
It could have been final and appealable at that time, but we wrestled with that issue because this is an ongoing appointment. Lippincott v. Lippincott was a divorce that was finished. With all due respect, this is an ongoing juvenile court matter. And so is it every time that this person, we have to object? Certainly we're not going to be here on every bill, but on this particular case there are two bills that have been objected to. It was an issue of this case is still ongoing. The attorney is still appointed to this case, and I apologize, I am out of town. I'm out of time, so I didn't. But I would submit on that basis.
Thank you very much. Ms. Roberts, good morning to you.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Christine Roberts and I am the appellee. Today I ask this court to affirm the judgment of the lower court and direct the county board to remit payment for services rendered. During a contested hearing on attorney's fees on March 18, 2019, the court asked, I am just going to round this off as to $12,000. That's approximately what you're asking for here or what's at stake, are you not? I responded with yes. The court asked the county attorney, are you suggesting that Ms. Roberts be paid for any of that time? The county attorney replied, she has already collected $23,000 in this case. The court, that wasn't my question. The county attorney, I am suggesting that, Judge. The court, that she not be paid for any of that time. The county attorney, correct. Yes, you heard that right. The county attorney asked the lower court to pay nothing for an almost week-long trial with preparation. From August 30th, 2018 through February 6th, 2019, two contested telephonic hearings were held, multiple client conferences were had, trial preparation for a scheduled 5-day trial with 25 witnesses was taking place, and many emails and phone calls regarding discovery were sent and placed.
Can your prior bills be considered in our evaluation here?
I don't believe so. I believe that issue is moot on this res judicata, that they had their opportunity to object to them when they did, and it's just not relevant here anymore.
Is there any case law on that?
I don't have any case law that I can tell you about today. It's possible I may have briefed it, but I didn't prepare that here today. I'm so sorry.
What do you think is the correct standard of review for considering the issue of attorney fees at this point in this type of case?
What's been done in the counties I practice in and what had been done in Washington County was that we...
I mean the appellate standard of review.
For which part?
De novo, for abuse of discretion, what's clear error, what's the appropriate appellate standard of review on this issue?
On the reasonableness?
Yes.
Fees? I believe it should be reviewed de novo, that the trial court has all the evidence it needs to make its decision, and that the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court should fall back on the trial court's order in these particular cases.
That sounds more like an abuse of discretion description.
I apologize.
Than de novo would mean that we would give no deference to the trial court. Is that what you're asking us to do?
No, I would say it would be the abuse of discretion that I described.
Okay.
I apologize for that. As for my client's indigency, I was not appointed yet when the financial affidavit was filled out, so I don't know how that process went. I don't know if the trial court swore her in. The judge in the Bill of Exceptions seems to indicate that the usual procedure was to swear them in. And my client has collected Social Security disability through the length of this.
We don't have a Bill of Exceptions from the time, from the hearing at which the original appointment was made.
Right. Right. No, it was just judge's comments during the hearing from March 18th, 2019 of how Washington County usually...
So we really don't know whether, as you suggest, it might have been a verbal administration of an oath to that person.
There is in the transcript her original financial affidavit.
But it's not sworn.
From March 2016.
But the point is, we don't know whether the judge administered an oath in open court that wasn't, well, that's not captured in our record.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes, we don't know that. As for the reasonableness of my fees, all of this said the court appointed rate is $75 an hour. There were conflicts regarding my discovery and then conflicts regarding a deposition for one of the children to testify, and then further contested hearings regarding the testimony, and a continuance took place. Finally, a four-day trial was held, and approximately 4 months later, a decision was rendered.
So what do you think the record tells us, if anything, about why suddenly there's an objection to the fees when there hadn't been for a series of significant fee applications?
I can only speculate that it was the amount.
Thank you.
The county attorney argues that I had already been paid over $23,000 over the length of this case, and that I should no longer be paid anymore. After a contested hearing on March 18, 2019, the lower court determined and ordered that my fees were fair, reasonable, and proper, and that said fees shall be paid by Washington County, Nebraska, in the amount of $12,103.80.
Counsel, in both of the appeals that are before this court, there was evidence received on the state's objection, correct?
Correct.
And your affidavit was received as evidence in both of those, correct?
Correct.
Did your affidavit include an allegation that your client, that the parent you were representing, was indigent and unable to pay your fees?
I don't believe I put that in my affidavit. I was unaware that that was a prong I had to prove at the hearing for my fees.
And I'm not suggesting one way or another on that issue.
Sure.
As I read the affidavits, they both contained that allegation.
Okay.
Is it your position that that is evidence of indigency that can be considered?
I don't see why not. I feel like it would really clog up all the dockets if we had to have evidentiary hearings on indigency every time a court-appointed client, their attorney wanted to get paid.
Are there court rules that govern fee applications by court-appointed counsel in juvenile cases? And if so, what do those rules require of lawyers who are asking to be paid?
I believe there are rules, and it's my understanding of the rules that we submit our bills for the county attorney to review or sign off on, and that they be submitted to the court, and if there's no objection, the court can order those fees and get it to the county board to remit payment.
Is your assumption, as you read the rules, that once indigency has been established, the rules only direct counsel to submit with respect to reasonableness of fees, rather than revisit?
That would be my assumption.
Is that how you read the language of the rules?
That is how I would read it. I would say if the county attorney heard something or found out something, that the client got a job or something changed, and I believe the burden would fall on them to go ahead and present that evidence to judge that they're no longer indigent, and they could present that evidence at the lower court.
In this case, was any evidence that your client was no longer indigent, was any evidence like that presented by Washington County?
No. And then quickly on the issue of, and specifically A-19-533, on the issue of whether I should be reimbursed for defending my fees in this appeal process, the appellant relies on In re Antone C, where there it states in that particular case there is no statute authorizing the county to pay for attorney's fees. But I would refer you to Nebraska Revised Statute Section 25-2737. In my brief, I quote a case, In re Estate of Reimer, which refers to an old Nebraska Revised Statute, Section 24-541.10.
Aren't you quoting from the appeal statutes from county court to district court?
Yes, I am.
Do you think that applies where there's a direct appeal from the county court to the sitting as a juvenile court to the Court of Appeals or Supreme Court? And if you do think they apply, what's the basis for that argument?
I do think it applies. I never was presented with the opportunity to argue in front of the district court. It was just since the original termination of parental rights was already on appeal, it was just taken over from the Court of Appeals and never made to the district court.
Well, juvenile appeals since sometime in the 1980s have never gone at all to the district court.
Right. But attorney's fees are supposed to.
Oh, attorney fees in juvenile cases?
Correct, yes.
So you're asserting, then are you in the wrong court?
Well, I filed a motion, but it was denied. I apologize.
Thank you.
So this is so much more than a procedural or contract case. This is a core constitutional issue. Do we believe in the right of counsel to defend indigent citizens and their fundamental constitutional rights? Or do we suffocate our profession's core duty of zealous representation? I have zealously represented this client in defending her parental rights when a termination of parental rights motion was filed, and I do not believe that she deserves any less representation than a private paying citizen. And I ask this court to affirm the decision of the Washington County Juvenile Court, and I would submit on that.
Before you sit down, the appellate court rules require court-appointed counsel in criminal cases to wait until after the mandate is filed and then file the application with the appointing court. Do you believe there is a similar rule with respect to juvenile appointments? And if not, what sort of rule would you recommend be followed?
I don't know if there's a similar rule in the juvenile court. Since these are ongoing cases, I feel like it's an easier burden on the county if it is submitted in a periodic way rather than all at once at the end, just to save the county from having to pay large sums. But I wouldn't have a recommendation for how a rule should go.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State Ex Rel Counsel for Discipline versus Argaragas. And my apologies if I...